Today on Rock of the Suburbs. Hang on, where's Jim and Patrick?
They heard we were talking about a band with 13 live albums.
So what happened?
They ran for the hills. Welcome to Rocking the Suburbs. I'm not Jim Lenihan, and with me is not Patrick Foster, but indeed
Mike Coley.
Mike, it's great to be with you. So Jim and Patrick have left us the keys to the studio.
We'll try not to knock any crucifixes off the wall during this week.
Yeah, I heard that you were going around firmly mounting everything to the wall to make sure nothing was going to come loose during the course of this.
Yes, I found all the studs and mounted everything securely in the studs.
Excellent. That's good to hear. Well, there's a reason you'd want to do that, because we are going to be talking about a band that will indeed rattle the walls and maybe shake a few things loose at times. And that is Iron Maiden. And so welcome to Iron Maiden Week. And before we get fired in, I'm just going to point out this is actually our second run-through, isn't it, Mike?
Second run-through. Yeah, we had a little technical difficulties recording the first episode the last time around. And hopefully everything goes smoothly this time.
Indeed, yes. When I was trying to edit together, I thought, and you realise how much you talk yourself when you're editing it, because you can see it on the screen. And I thought, but then I got to one section, like, Mike doesn't say anything there for about 10 minutes, so that can't be right. And then I realised, it's because it's dropped out for 10 minutes. So we're going around round two, so hopefully we'll get everything nailed, and we can get in some ways it's great, Mike, because we get even more chance to talk about Iron Maiden, which is,
yeah,
for
what's
us,
better than
great.
That?
Exactly. So, okay, well, we'll get fired in. And just a little brief intro on the band for those who you may or may not be familiar or may not be overly familiar with the band. Formed in 1975 in East London, which coincidentally is the part of the world where I'm from, and also why my football team is West Ham, the same as Steve Harris, which will get referenced at times, no doubt, through what gets referenced repeatedly through their career, and probably during the course of this week as well. So, so Mike, tell me about how you first discovered Iron Maiden and their music.
Well, my origin story begins with Kiss, as many people, many of the listeners are aware, from my Kiss week with Patrick not long ago. But so, you know, when you're into Kiss, you're into that theatrical, you're into that heavier stuff. That was, you know, that was when I was young. So I was like 8, 9, 10 years old getting into Kiss. And then a buddy of mine happened to have a painter's hat. They had the Iron Maiden Number of the Beast logo on it. And it intrigued me. So I had to look into it. And I jumped in on Iron Maiden on the Number of the Beast album. And I haven't looked back. Iron Maiden was my pathway that led me to even heavier stuff down the line, but they've always stuck with me. Like most stuff that you listen to when you're around 13, 14, 15 years old, that's the first time you're really starting to explore music as a young person, and that's just stuck with me since then.
Yes, I guess particularly like with the imagery and the artwork and all the other stuff that they do well. Yeah, if it gets you at the right age, as you and Patrick talked about when you talked about Kiss, you know, it's got you. Once it's got you,
yeah, you're hooked. Hooks in you.
Well, indeed, yes, yes. Although a little early in the week to be talking about that, but we will get to that. okay. Well, for my sort of awareness of Iron Maiden came about slightly differently. In that I didn't really get into them probably at that time. I certainly became aware of them around the time at that sort of 82 sort of period. But it was more my first real awareness of them was from a Lucozade advert. Now, for non-UK based listeners, most of you out there, Lucozade is an energy drink that was around, you know, in the 70s and 80s before energy drinks were the mass market thing that they are now. And they had an advert with the Olympic decathlete Daley Thompson. I'm sure you will remember him, Mike, because he won gold at the Los Angeles Olympics in 84.
Yeah, I remember him.
Yeah, so he was a big star in the UK because of, you know, winning gold at the Olympics and in athletics. So, and he featured in a Lucozade advert, which is basically him on the starting blocks, then doing the hurdles. And the theme for that advert was Phantom of the Opera, which, that was kind of my introduction to the music of Iron Maiden. Like, oh, that's the band that does the Lucozade advert.
That's pretty forward thinking by their ad department back in the day, you know?
Yeah, I'm not assured exactly the date of, I mean, that may not have, yeah, the exact date of when that advert was about, I'm not entirely certain. But definitely, I clearly remember because it's such a dramatic piece of music. Again, especially when you're young, it's like, wow, this is a bit different to what I normally hear my mum and dad listening to. Or indeed, on normal TV adverts at the time, you weren't really getting metal as a soundtrack to TV adverts. So, that was kind of my sort of first introduction to them. And coincidentally enough, Phantom of the Opera, of course, appears on their self-titled debut album, which came out in 1980. So why don't we take a listen to that, Mike, and then we can talk some more about both Phantom of the Opera and their debut album.
Okay.
Hits you with a punch, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I can certainly see why young Stephen Routledge was taken by that song from the commercial. I didn't get into this era of Maiden until well after I was into them from the Number of the Beast on. I think I really picked up on Maiden stuff, the earlier stuff, when I heard the Live After Death album where they incorporated Running Free and Iron Maiden. Mm-hmm. Onto that album, and that's where I really started digging back into their catalog, the earlier stuff with Paul Di'Anno singing.
Yeah. So, what's your thoughts on that on this debut album, then, Mike?
I've said it before. I know Steve Harris has disputed this fact vehemently, but it's got a punk feel to it, I think. Just from where they're coming from at this point in time, this is what, 1980.
Yes.
And, you know, the tail end of the main punk movement that started in the mid-70s. And it's just got that raw punk riff feel to it. But it's still got that little galloping Maiden to it as well. And it's obviously not punk lyrics or punk songwriting, but just the feel of the song itself. This whole album just has that kind of feel, I think.
No, I entirely agree with you, Mike. I mean, that was my notes that I'd made myself, is that, yeah, it's a punkish attitude or feel. You know, sonically, stylistically, the artwork, the band makeup, everything about it isn't punk, but there is something that they've drawn from it that isn't there in the later stuff. Yeah, that's particularly on those first two albums, and especially on the debut, is not present in the later work. That's without doubt. And yeah, given that, as you said, as we said, they were formed in 1975, and so for 5 years they were playing the pubs and clubs of East London alongside, at that time, lots of punk bands. You know, that aggressiveness, but it's not just the aggressiveness, because metal has that anyway. It's kind of, there's almost like an upstart nature to it, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to define what that is, but you kind of know it when you hear it.
I mean, it's got some technicality of what metal, and, you know, they're like the later on prog influences that kind of seeped into their sound. But just that the raw sound of their guitars is very punk to me.
Yes, yeah. I mean, like you say, yeah, punk bands weren't punk bands aren't playing riffage like that. You know, and those fast leads and harmonized leads. You know, they're just not doing that. But like you say, there's a rawness and an edginess to it that will disappear and replaced, to be fair, with something better that works a lot better for them as a band. But it definitely gives that debut and the second album, Killers, a slightly different flavour that the others definitely don't have. So, okay. Well, any other thoughts on the debut, or Mike, or should we move on to Killers?
I need to give it a re-listen. I mean, I did a run through not too long ago, where I just decided to listen to every Iron Maiden album, studio album, from front to back, from the first album through to their most recent. And so it's been a bit since, because it actually took me, I don't know, maybe a week and a half to listen to all the albums right in a row. I need to go back to it, because I've never properly gotten deep into this album as much as a true Maiden fan should.
Well, I think, a couple of things from that, Mike. I mean, one, I think you sent me the screenshot of you now playing, and you're saying you were starting to work your way through the whole run of it. And I think that was the genesis of us talking about, oh, let's do Iron Maiden Week. Mm-hmm. And me hitting up Jim and saying, hey, is it all right if Mike and I do Iron Maiden Week? And then, but then also the fact that we have to do Iron Maiden Week and not a show on Iron Maiden is testament to the fact that it took you a week and a half just to listen to all their albums, and that's just the studio albums.
Yes.
And never mind all the various live albums as well. So that's highly appropriate. Okay, well, let's move on to Killers, and we won't stay too long on Killers, simply because we've got bigger fish to fry with the aforementioned Number of the Beast. To my mind, and I'll be interested to see what you think as well, Mike, Killers is just is that classic second album of, it's very much a continuation of the first album. It feels like, here's some leftovers, here's some new stuff we've maybe knocked up on the road, but we haven't really found our true voice yet, you know? And I mean, right. a little bit of hindsight colours that view, obviously, but it's hard to imagine experiencing it in real time. But there's not much on the second album that isn't on the debut, is there, really, to be fair?
Yeah, very, very similar albums. The one difference I would say between Killers and the self-titled is that Killers, the production sounds a little bit more polished.
Yes, I mean, I think the most significant thing about Killers for me is that, I mean, it marks the start of a long run of albums which will feature a new member of personnel that didn't feature on the previous one. So, and this is a significant change because Adrian Smith replaces Dennis Stratton on guitar. And as we will talk about much during the course of this week, I am a particular fan of the guitar work of Adrian Smith and what he brings to the band. And this marked his debut, although there's nothing particular on here that makes you stand up and go, oh, okay, this is radically changed the band. Those things are to come, but it's a significant change nonetheless, you know.
Yeah, I think it adds a little bit more to the polished sound. I think Stratton's guitar work is a little more raw.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think you're right there. I mean, I think there's no doubt that Adrian Smith is a more interesting and a better player. I think, you know, for a lot, I remember Steve Harris being quoted about, you know, Dave Murray, who's the, along with Steve Harris, who's the founder of, and sort of the boss of the band. You know, Dave Murray on guitar is the only other ever present member throughout their entire career who's played on every record, and, you know, has never had, never not been in the band since they've been recording. Yeah, Steve Harris said about Dave Murray. That's it. I mean, he said that the problem with Davey is that he's so good that he didn't really need a lot. You know, he could do everything pretty much on his own, and it's trying to find someone else who could complement him and add to it rather than, you know, and that was a sort of difficult job they had at the time. But him and Adrian form a formidable partnership, which will continue for many years.
Yeah, definitely. And that's kind of opened the door. I mean, you look at bands like Thin Lizzy, and Priest earlier on, mm-hmm. with their double guitars, and even like Scorpions and whatnot. But I think Maiden were kind of the band that brought the double guitar to the forefront in the metal scene, where bands that followed them later on wanted to emulate what yes. they were doing with the dual guitar sound.
Yeah, and I know Steve Harris has said that I definitely remember again reading about he was quite heavily, I know he was influenced by a lot of the prog and heavy rock bands of the early 70s, but a band called Wishbone Ash, who did a lot of the twin harmony lead guitar stuff as well, were quite an influence on him, I think.
I'm not very familiar with those guys.
Yeah, they're kind of a proggy band. I think Argus was their one sort of big record, but you're in that early Genesis kind of time, you know, and sort of Deep Purple time frame. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we're not here to talk about Wishbone Ash. We can let others take up that baton should they wish. Okay, well, let's get on to the big beast, as it were, of these first three albums, if you'll pardon the pun. And that is 1982's Number of the Beast. And this marks a number of changes for the band, but let's start off by listening to possibly their most well-known song from that album, and then we'll talk quite a bit more about it and the album, no doubt. Okay, so let's have a quick listen to Run to the Hills. Mike,
there it is. The trademark gallop.
Oh boy!
You can't help but to envision the video of that old time movie with the old West images of the cavalry and the Native American chasing each other on their horses. Just hearing that.
Yeah, and it just it's hard not to get pumped by that.
Oh, absolutely.
You just can't.
You cannot listen to that on volume level 4.
No.
It has to be all the way to 11.
Yeah, and some part of your body has to move. You can't sit perfectly still. Even if it's just your head, you can't not respond to it. I mean, that's an all-time classic.
And even the passive Maiden fans, that if you have a Maiden shirt on and somebody comments on it, they're probably going to refer to this song. I think it's probably their signature song.
Yeah, just because if your mum's heard of a Maiden song, it'll be this one.
Exactly.
Yes. there's a reason they close their shows with it. Yeah, it's one of a number of classics from this this album, which was their big breakthrough. But I think the first thing we need to talk about, Mike, is that the attentive listener will notice that that is a different singer than was on Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah, I remember when I picked up this album originally and, you know, pulled the sleeve out, and he was named Bruce Air Raid Siren Dickinson in the liner notes. And I was like, all right, let me check this out. Sure enough, it was a pretty accurate description.
Indeed, yes. I mean, it's interesting sort of listening to the album now. Whilst it's their breakthrough album and it took them to another whole level of success, you know, it really launched them on their path. It starts off fairly innocuously. It's quite low key relative to what comes after. It's only when you get, you know, you clock that, okay, this is a different singer, but there's nothing too much going on here until you then get to Children of the Damned, and suddenly he unleashes that full sort of banshee wail for the first time.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh boy, yeah, we're not in Kansas anymore, Dorothy. Yes. So yeah, continuing the line of personnel changes, Paul Di'Anno, he left the band or was removed from the band, I think mainly for on the road overindulgence in the booze, and was replaced by Bruce Dickinson, who we heard there to great effect. The contribution that he makes to this album cannot be overstated, I feel, Mike, can it?
Absolutely not. I mean, this took them straight up to the top. I mean, they've never really had much chart success in the U.S., but it got them noticed in the U.S. for sure. Yeah. Especially the time when this album came out was when MTV was first coming out the air. And there weren't a whole lot of videos, especially heavy music videos. So this the video for Run to the Hills got a lot of airplay on MTV back in the day. And I think that really helped solidify their fan base here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And it just, you know, it definitely took them over the top, you know, and they haven't really relinquished since then.
No, indeed not. I mean, yes, certainly it's one of the all-time classic metal albums. It's certainly one of the most influential metal albums of all time. And even though both you and I, yeah, spoilers for later in the week, are, whilst we don't agree on which one is their best album, we're in agreement that this isn't their best album, even though it's their most important album. And, yeah, the addition of Dickinson just elevates things to such another level. Now, if you read the liner notes, he's quoted as, it says that he made a significant moral contribution to the album, but he's not credited on any of the songwriting, which I believe for a man of the letters like yourself, Mike, will understand that means he did write some of the songs, but we're not allowed to say that he did.
Yeah.
Otherwise we'll get sued.
Contractually obliged not to mention that.
Yeah, due to the previous band that he had left in order to join Iron Maiden, there were contractual wranglings. But the fact that he has contributed to the songwriting is crystal clear, because it goes up a significant notch. Now, obviously, Steve Harris is still the main man, but the themes and just, you know, the leap in quality of both the songwriting and also the production of this album, which is down to Martin Birch, not down to Bruce Dickinson, the production, but you know, is immediately apparent. It's night and day above what's come before, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, this album contains probably one of the most definitive heavy metal songs ever written and performed to close out the album.
Not one of, Mike. I would say for me, it is the song that defines heavy metal. If you open up your Encyclopedia Britannica or wherever the Encyclopedia Americana equivalent is, and look up heavy metal. Yeah, if you open up and look up heavy metal, what you should find there is a copy of Hallowed Be Thy Name, which is the closing track on this album. And
what a way to close.
Oh, my word. Yeah, talk about classics. Well, before we talk more about it, Mike, let's have a listen. And then, because for those who are listening who have never heard this, well, one, you need to go and listen to the full song because it's, it's over 7 minutes long. So we can't play all that for you now, much as we'd like to. But please go and listen to the whole thing because as we said, it's one of the greatest songs in heavy metal music. Okay, let's have a listen. Not easy to stop that one, Mike.
What'd you stop it for?
I know, we're both nodding our heads away to that one. There it is. Yeah, that's Hallowed by Thy Name. Mike, talk to me about it.
Just an epic song. You close your eyes, you can see the story happening in your mind as Dickinson sings. You picture this guy in his prison cell and he's ready to be hanged, and you feel it, and you feel the tension building throughout as it builds throughout the song. It's one of those songs that could be definitely made into a movie.
Yeah, it's something that they do again multiple times in their career. The music and the subject matter, they're a perfect match. But that's good on its own, but then it's also this all-time classic piece of music as well. Yeah, matching the subject matter to the mood and the feel of the music is one thing, but then writing one of the greatest songs of all time as well, then, yeah, it's your home run there, isn't it? It's like, okay, now we know we're dealing with a serious band, and they're going to be around, with this kind of quality, because...
Definitely was a harbinger for what future Maiden was going to become.
Yes, I think it sets the path into the rest of the catalogue and the rest of the week. But I mean, I just have to go back to Dickinson again though, because that intro there when he starts running low and he holds it and then he jumps it up and then goes into the scream, it's just. Yeah, you realise at this point, we're dealing with one of the, and as has proved to be the case since, that we're dealing with one of the greatest vocalists.
Yes, do not try this at home, kids.
Yeah, yes, please do not attempt this if you are not a professional singer. But also, we're dealing with one of the all-time greats here, certainly in terms of metal vocalists. If you've got your your top, yeah, you got your three big, your big three. You know, you got Rob Halford, you got Ronnie James Dio, and you got Bruce Dickinson. And to my mind, you know, none of them is the wrong answer.
End of story. All, that's it. Those three.
Yeah, you know, everyone else in metal is aspiring to be one of those, one of those three, because they set the standard. You know,
and that's it. That's absolutely it. Because you look at the bands that followed all three of these guys. Mm-hmm. Throughout the years, and that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to be one of these three guys.
Yeah, yeah. There is just the difference it makes to the album, to the songwriting, and to everything is immeasurable. And so, yeah. Please, listeners, there will be a playlist to accompany this week. Hallowed Be Thy Name will most certainly be on it. So please, please listen to, if you only listen to one song on that playlist all the way through, listen to Hallowed Be Thy Name, because yeah, it's
recommended final. That if you are driving, that you're on open road with not a whole lot of traffic, so because you may get a little heavy on the pedal.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, the whole playlist is probably going to have that effect.
Yeah, 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 but true.
But especially this one, yeah. Such a great song. You say it's got everything. It's got a slow build. It's got the story. It's got the imagery. It's got the intricate lead guitar work. It's got the stop start power chords. It's got the gallop. It's got the soaring vocals. It's got the lot.
Everything you want in a metal song.
There's a reason both Mike and I have referred to this as, you know, the definitive song of metal, because they may not have invented heavy metal, but they perfected it with this song. And again, the influence of both this album and that song is hard to overstate. Well, we're kind of finishing on a high note there, Mike, in more ways than one. Well, Bruce Dickinson's finishing on a high note. we'll maybe not quite reach those heights ourselves, but...
I will try to avoid that.
Indeed,
for everybody's benefit.
Yes, me too. Yeah, me too. That's we'll skip over that. But I think before we wrap up, only one other thing I just wanted to comment on. I think I mentioned briefly Children of the Damned earlier, and because of the influence of this album, I think for my money, yeah, Metallica definitely had that in mind when they were writing Unforgiven. I think for the Black Album. Because there's a definite thematic and sort of vibe kind of similarity between the two of them that's hard to ignore.
Yeah, I could see that for sure.
Yeah, and I doubt that, you know, Lars or James would argue with that, because
especially with their big influence in the new wave.
Yes, exactly.
Indeed,
they're never going to deny their work influence, but there's definitely a foreshadower of what that was to come about a decade later. So, okay, well, we'll wrap up for today then, Mike. We've covered the first three albums in Iron Maiden's career. Is there anything else you wanted to add before we finish the show for today?
Nothing from me.
Okay, well, all that remains then is for me to say, please get in touch. Let us know what you think about both Iron Maiden and our thoughts on them, and feel free to disagree and offer your points of view. If you disagree that Hallowed Be Thy Name is the most important track in heavy metal, then we may have a long discussion, but...
there will be words.
There will be words said, yes, but joking aside, no, please get in touch. Let us know what you think. And to do that, you can contact the show by emailing. It's rock@suburbspod.com. On the social medias, it's @suburbspod. You can call the Suburban Party Line, which is
612-440-1984.
And if you want to get in touch with me on Twitter, I am @powderfinger71, or just plain old Stephen Routledge on Facebook. And Mike, you are...
I am @MikeColey on Twitter and @MikeColey on Facebook. I also now have a brand new radio show on the newly launched Rock in the Suburbs radio station. Mm-hmm. It's an internet radio station. You can find that at suburbsradio.com. The name of my show is Walking at a Suburban Pace. And you may get some Maiden. You may get plenty of other things on my show. But my show usually airs on Saturday mornings at 11 Eastern Time, and it replays on Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time.
Excellent. Good stuff. We'll be sure to listen out to that, folks, as well. And all that remains is, Mike, for me to thank you for joining me for day one of Iron Maiden Week.
I'm having fun. Thank you, sir.
And we shall continue this tomorrow. What was it I said about us knowing what we're doing this time?
Yes. That's what happened to me on my first show. I forgot to run the fader across in between songs, and one whole Anthrax song was nothing but dead air when I went back to listen to it. And I'm like, oh, man.